expensive sometimes are the ones with the least amount of quality control. So you kind of play it a little Russian roulette if you buy the cheapest Chinese lithium iron phosphate cell clusters. But, you know, the price is going down, and they're very good. They're safer than lithium ion or lithium polymer technology, less likely to explode. So very good technology. Brian, did you want to say something on the subject? Yes, Paul.
Years ago, I bought a marine battery, deep cycle battery for my truck, and for a number of reasons, but one of them, it had these big wing nuts on top, which was great for, you know, tying in a ring, you know, it made it very easy, you know. Ran wires through the firewall and went right to the battery, and it had these big wing nuts, and was able to attach the connections to that. But, you know, the good thing about it was, you know, if I had problems with the truck, and, you know, you crank it and crank it, and next thing you know, the thing quits on you. You know, I was able to keep that battery. I don't know how many, it must have been 12 years. It just never quit on me, you know, no matter how many times I killed the battery because of the deep cycle action to it. Back to you, Roy.
Yeah, it's a good technology. You paid a little bit of a premium for it, but I think they were worth it. Yes, Jim?
At least in the lead acid technology on vehicles, while the deep cycle seems like the obvious play, it's a lot more expensive. But the main thing is it has way, way less cold cranking amps. So you have to have a much bigger battery to start it, like today, this evening, if it's a deep cycle battery, than if it was a standard car battery, which is designed to put out high current, short duration, in cold temperatures. Deep cycle battery is not designed to do that. So if you get a battery that can start your engine tonight, it's going to be big. They're all conflicting parameters, and it's a great discussion. I think there's no one perfect answer for any of these. It's a great equation, I suppose. Back to that.
WS2N.
Yeah, Paul?
Yeah, I took Dick's advice years ago. He used to say this many times. He wants a battery that's going to fit in his car that the highest amount of cranking amp battery, with the battery physical size, whatever will fit into my tray. That's what I wanted, you know. So I probably wound up with a 500 or 550 or something. I seem to recall, but there was plenty to turn over a 318 engine. Back to you, Roy.
Okay, I mean the difference is it ends up costing you more, which is, you know, there's always compromises, there's always choices to be made. Nothing is a perfect solution. If it was, there wouldn't be the other options out there.
I concur. Brian?
Yeah, Brian?
Okay, I just wanted to comment on a couple of things. First comment, who was mentioning about EMP possibly being used in Venezuela?
I forget exactly. I think it might have been Wesley was asking the question. It was based on Jim was being somewhat vague because he didn't want to enter into any kind of political discussion, simply a technological discussion of a non-nuclear power-based EMP pulse weapon.
Okay, is Jim online?
Yes, he is.
Hi, Jim. This is Brian, KF2ZZ. When you have a chance, do a Google search on CHAMP. CHAMP weapon. It's a high-energy microwave-based pulse weapon that you might want to be looking at, CHAMP, C-H-A-M-P weapon. Number two, I just wanted to clarify that there's a lithium ion polymer battery, which is L-I-P-O, as in lithium polymer, okay? And the other one is lithium ion phosphate, which is an L-I-F-E-P-O-4 battery, and that has more density. So I just wanted to differentiate between the two, that the not the lithium ion, it's a derivative of that. These have L-I-P-O, which is lithium ion polymer, and you have lithium ion phosphate, which is L-I-F-E-P-O-4 battery.
Can I reply, Roy?
Certainly.
Good points, Brian. Good points all. Well aware of the LiPo-4 versus the lithium-ion batteries. The lithium-ion batteries have better power density, but they are a lot more dangerous if you start to play with them. And if you bridge their parameters, they tend to do nasty things. The LiPo-4 batteries tend to be much safer for playing around like we do. Both worth knowing about. And as far as the EMP weapon stuff, it sounds like what you're describing is what they've been using as an anti-personnel device. Basically, it's a microwave oven with a Yagi antenna that kind of warms you up so you don't want to be there. That's deployed all around. I've been to many events where they actually, police departments have them set up, and most people aren't aware of it, but there they are. This is the question I had was these EMP devices, which the news reports seem to be saying we use to take out radar facilities and power plants and electronic communication stations and things like that. And it's probably way too early to answer this tonight. But it's very interesting technological stuff that seems to be brought to bear or being talked about anyway. That's what I was talking about. And back to Roy.
Yeah, I think CHAMP is closer to your original question. Number one, it's a missile project, so it's not discrete object, devices that you can set up. And also, if you go to Wikipedia, it describes it as not having an effect on human targets. So I think it's closer to what people might think in terms of EMP weapons.
Okay.
Interesting. Very good. Thank you. I'll look.
Yes, Wesley?
Yeah, American diplomats and their families in Cuba and China report the mysterious alignment since 2016. There was alleged microwave weapon or EMP weapon. They had the CIA, dizziness, sleep problems, hearing loss, and some cognitive issues. Do you recall that?
Yeah, I recall that. I even recall that on one of our tech nets, Dick watched the special on 60 Minutes just before the technical net started, and the 60 Minutes. Piece was very favorable towards it. As far as I'm aware, it really never was proven to be legitimate. It sounded and it seemed to be more group hysteria, and no one ever discovered any proof of it. So I thought back then it was group hysteria, and there's lots of very interesting, weird things that people have gone through throughout the centuries that turned out to just be hysterical reactions. So I remember the incidents. I remember them getting vaguer and weirder as time went on, and I remember that no one actually had a legitimate proof for any of it.
Yeah, they called it Havana syndrome. So it looks like there were faults, right?
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. Yeah, I think, you know, although lithium ion and lithium polymer came relatively long before lithium iron phosphate, the incidence of different Chinese devices bursting into flames repeatedly caused their manufacturer to change to lithium iron phosphate batteries. And with some benefit, I think they still occasionally blow up, but a lot less than they used to.
I don't know whether what they even use in an iPhone right now, whether it's just lithium ion or lithium iron phosphate.
As far as I'm aware, it's lithium iron polymer.
Oh, they use an LiPo battery. Is lithium, when they, because these are all usually categorized under lithium ion, which is kind of true, but they don't differentiate between lithium ion polymer, and lithium ion phosphate.
Well, I don't know. I mean, on the material that I have, it specifically says that it's lithium iron phosphate because they, you know, they're in the same class, but they're not the exact same chemistry, and they have different characteristics. So although you might not get a lithium iron polymer that says it's a polymer, it just might say lithium ion, I've never come across a lithium iron phosphate that didn't say lithium iron phosphate.
The question is the lithium ion phosphate, does that have the same energy density of a standard lithium ion?
No, it has. Say again, Jim?
I'd like to comment on that.
Sure.
The lithium ion has better energy density. It's undisputed. And if you do everything about charging it and discharging it perfectly, it's pound for pound, got more battery. It does more with what batteries do. Until they blow up. And I've had one blow up in my lap when I literally had a laptop on my legs and it blew up and gave me second degree burns on my legs. So I've been there and seen it. Lithium iron phosphate, LiPo4, is not as energy dense, but it's far less critical of the parameters that you charge and discharge it with. And I would suggest, and most people that have explored this would suggest, if you're going to play with batteries, use a LiPo4 battery. Most consumer electronics, the cell phone in your pocket, the battery in your computer, is a lithium ion battery. Better energy density, and when it's controlled by the specific devices that are meant to charge and discharge it, usually it's safe, but not always, as evidenced by the explosion in my lap. So there's that. Back to Roy.
A comment.
Okay, very, very good, Jim. And the difference in energy capacity is not dramatic. It's there, but you know, it's not a make or break type of thing. Brian, you want to say something?
Yes. I don't know if any of you remember when the Dreamliner 787, Boeing 787, came out. They had a fire in the belly of the airplanes where they had lithium-ion batteries that were stored to go ahead and keep the airplane, when it was on the ground, basically working. And then they went ahead and did away with that, and I don't know if they substituted lithium-ion phosphate instead, or they had to go ahead and put it in a more thick steel cage or something like that to contain it, but there was an issue.
Okay, I don't remember that particular thing, but I would assume that they switched to lithium iron phosphates. Could be wrong.
So the question is, if I was to buy a battery today, what is the advantage of the polymer over the phosphate?
The polymer has a little bit more energy capacity, and you're able to kind of It's sort of designed for odd-shaped cavities. You can build them into form fitting so that the mask could be most efficiently inserted in the device. So the only real reason for the polymer is that it allows for plasticity of the battery, and you can have odd-shaped batteries, whereas things like lithium iron phosphate are designed either as cylinders or flat battery packs. And I don't think they come in any other shape or size. So with lithium iron phosphate, you get the benefit of a more stable battery chemistry, less likely to have a thermal runaway, for the price of a small amount of storage capability.
Okay, because that makes complete sense to me, and I appreciate it. Thank you. The other thing is that how do you determine, like in so many devices, lithium ion this, lithium ion that, how do you really define safety? Are they tested at all in the U.S. by any standards body, or is it just basically whatever you get from China and you pray for the best?
I would assume, unfortunately, it's the latter, because I don't really think that there's agencies that kind of do that in the United States. They probably accept external documentation, and so if the Chinese are going to fib about it, they'll just fib. The problem is that, it's a complicated risk. It's not only, as Jim kind of alluded to, not only the battery chemistry and the battery manufacturer, but it's also the manufacturer of the charging device. If you have a charging device that's not quite as clever as it should be, there's a possibility of thermal runaway, which is one of the causes for the batteries to ignite. So it may be a passable battery, but a questionable charger that dooms you.
That's interesting, because I also remember something with lithium ion in the production of these batteries, something called dendrites that are formed.
Yeah, that's one of the failure modes for a lot of rechargeable batteries. If when you're recharging they develop dendrites, it increases the risk of the battery internally shorting, and that leads to thermal runaway of the cells.
Okay, thank you very much.
You're welcome. Someone else wanted to say something, I think?
Yeah, you don't mind to say a few words about aluminum ions. So, the 3 electrons per ion, enabling higher charge and whatever. Now, it says that it's 0.35 seconds, so it's not even 1 second for charging to, says in here. I have an article in front of me, but the thing is that Elon Musk says this is his 2026 battery, but you know.
Well, you know, I mean, I made a joke that in the old days there were kind of two, for the science talk, there were two topics that kept on being brought back again and again and again about breakthrough technologies. And that was the graphene, and it was rechargeable batteries. Every other week there was some guy who was claiming to have the breakthrough battery chemistry that would change the nature of things. The last one that did that was lithium, lithium ion, lithium iron phosphate. There's aluminum, and there's especially sodium. Recently, a major Chinese battery manufacturer has started to manufacture sodium-based rechargeable batteries. But again, they have down with a rapid charging rate. But if you look really at the small print, you'll find that the energy capacity of the battery is minuscule. So it might charge quickly, but it doesn't charge to any kind of significant quantity. You have sodium batteries. Some people are fascinated. There's a lot of new YouTubes on the subject, but they have problems. They're very inefficient. The amount of energy that you have to put in to charge one of those sodium-based batteries is much more than the power that you put in for a lithium charge. So, like all things, there are compromises. There are a lot of promises, and most of the promises are never fulfilled.
Yeah, based on the literature that I have, it says that 15 minutes is the charge time, and 15,000 cycles. That would be, 50,000 days. Wow. What kind of fantasy world we are living at, back to you?
Well, who knows? Brave New World, it might be possible. But ultimately, when you read the literature on things like this, they're getting very theoretical. They're having, something with a 1 milliamp hour energy capacity, and then they're just upscaling it to a normal capacity without actually experimenting on any battery technology. So, take early specs with a couple of grains of salt. And it's good. It's a good source of the sodium ion.
Okay. I'm sorry, interrupting the subject about lithium ion. So last question, if you could say a few words about it. AC2GS shows that all stars are decoding, and all others are numbers, and also echolink numbers. How did you like it?
Not quite.
Before subject has changed?
Sure, John.
No, we're not changing the subject.
Yeah, just something that the net might find interesting if you're familiar with the Veritasium channel. He has a really good video on the batteries, and of course there's tons of them out there from all kinds of different sources, but it's just one I watched recently. It came out 4 months ago, and he titled it The Perfect Battery Material is Dangerous. He likes things that raise hairs, as his titles, because he likes the clicks. But it is a good video, so everybody watch. If you get a chance and you're curious about this subject, watch the Veritasium YouTube channel video called The Perfect Battery Material is Dangerous. That's all I got. Now, KC2SHO, back to net.
Okay, very good, John. Well, one of the important characteristics that people looking for the perfect battery are looking for the highest energy density. When you have something with a very high energy density and anything goes wrong, that usually leads to a marked disaster. So it's kind of intrinsic in, any battery is inherently an energy storage device, and you want something to store as much in as little volume as humanly possible. So, it's always a compromise. Relatively low energy density batteries, if they short out internally, they just warm up and then fail. They don't explode in your face. But, lithium certainly has a very good energy density and can explode in your face.
KC2FRU.
Yes, George?
Nickel metal hydride. The only thing left on the market that I see is in double A's and charges for that. Well, a lot of devices still will only allow you to install nickel metal hydride batteries and not lithium ion batteries, because lithium ion batteries require capacitive control that alternating from an alkaline to a nickel metal hydride did not require. Does anybody have any comments on that?
Okay, lithium-ion batteries are still very popular. I think Samsung or Sanyo originally manufactured them, and I think another probably Chinese company has taken over their manufacturer, and I have the chargers for them, and I use them regularly. I have a bunch of them in my drawer right next to me right now. So, nickel ion, cadmium, nickel cadmium has memory problems, and so I think most people have thankfully retired those. And there are lithium-ion-based AA batteries that have little USB charging slots. They have voltage-converting hardware embedded in the battery. So it's possible, although, you know, when I see the oscilloscope output for those batteries, you know, the pulses kind of frighten me a little bit.
KD2FYU. Okay, nickel metal hydride. All right, not lithium ion, not NiCad, and certainly not charges that go into USB slots, because that's the cheap way of giving you a charger and letting you utilize your USB slots from your computers or from your cell phones that will burn out quickly utilizing those battery chargers. What happened to NiMHA batteries? And they're the only ones left in the AA and AAA market. They're claiming 300 times charging. These are not alkalines. These are not lithium ion. Nickel metal hydride, and their standard charges, very, very effective, disappeared.
Yeah, well, the nickel metal hydride hasn't disappeared. There's actually two varieties. One has a higher storage capacity, but less recycle times. And the other has the opposite. It has a lower capacity, but you could recharge it significantly more. I've tried both. They're good items. I never really invested in the kind of sneaky lithium-ion AA, AAAs with either the USB slots or some means of supplying 5 volts, and then it has a voltage controlled device on the recharging thing. It was popular for a little bit. It was famous in YouTubes and such. But the nickel metal hydrides are my particular rechargeable AA plus et cetera type of batteries these days.
Yeah, you see, Roy, my impression is, and has been over many years, that nickel metal hydride can be replaceable in alkaline packs, but you cannot put NiCads in alkaline packs because you require a capacitive control, which the AA alkaline packs do not have, and therefore you can use nickel metal hydride. So I've been researching this, and I look and I see, well, there's certain ones, and they only come up with chargeable packs that go into USB ports. I don't think that is good. Why wear down the output energy of a USB port of your computer, of your desktop, I mean, of your laptop, whatever, of your cell phone chargeable pack? What, to charge your battery? No, that's not what it's for.
Well, once again, it sounds like it's more of a marketing decision than a technological one. I'm sure there are marketers who've asked people if they have if they would prefer battery recharging units, or if they happen to have USB chargers for their electrical devices, their cell phone, you know, all the little gadgets that take the USB connector. And there's probably a lot more of those devices that charge up, you know, simple USB-based hardware. So I'm sure some marketer said, just make it compatible with the USB-C, you know, specifications, and you'll get more sales from consumers.
Which is really a ludicrous way of doing things. Because if you want to charge batteries, use a battery charger. Not your computers or your cell phone's charging capacity. wear that down more quickly, because these battery chargers really, really drain big. Back to what I was asking. Metal hydride batteries as rechargeable batteries for most of anything that had an alkaline is compatible, and it's disappearing.
KB2MAR.
Yes?
That interrupts. I have an input regarding the AIMH batteries for the longest and mildest capacity cells. The Sanyo Eneloop AA batteries have quite a large capacity of 2100 milliamp hour, and they say 2100 life cycles, whatever, I don't know if it's true or not. I happen to be using them right now with this HT. Over to you there, Roy. Sorry to interrupt you guys.
Roy, excellent.
No problem.
Ask them to come again.
Okay, I'll ask them to come again. I'll just add that I use Eneloops. Again, I think that they're manufactured by Sanyo these days, but I think once upon a time it was another manufacturer. But it, no matter where they move to, I find them very useful, and I always have a bunch of them on hand. But if you want to repeat it, because I don't think George heard you completely.
Yeah, the Sanyo Eneloops, well, they're not Panasonic, they bought Sanyo, and these are NIMH AA batteries. They have a capacity of 2100 milliamp hours, and you can charge them for around 2,000, that is, and they'll hold their charge and storage for a maximum of, I think, 5 years, maybe even more than that. Of course, the capacity that can be the same as if it was for 1 year. But they're very, very excellent storage capacity. Over to you there, Roy.
Yeah, I usually recharge my loose Eneloops once a year, if I remember to. There's also a different model that has a different capacity. I think it's a lower capacity, but it has a relatively higher number of cycle times.
Roy, I missed Sanyo and what model it was. I caught everything about the capacity, but the model.
Panasonic, that's the brand. The model number is a AA. That's just a generic name for them. Model number, you have to go on Amazon. It'll show you everything. Just type in Panasonic Eneloop.
Panasonic what? Roy, did you catch that?
Eneloop.
Yes,
Eneloop. E-N-E-L-O-O-P, Eneloop.
Did you get it that time, George?
E-N-L-O-O-P. Thank you.
E-N-E-L-O-O-P.
Copy. KD2FIU clear. Thank you very much.
Okay, very good. Once again, I approve them. I use them. I charge them once a year, and the loose ones that I just have in the drawer. And so, they're good. I also have alkalines when that suits me, when I don't want to invest as much money in rechargeables and I just want to use them and then throw them away. So any other comment on this particular subject before we move on?
PhD with a closing comment.
Certainly, Jim.
So while my electronic background is far inferior to many others here, my dying of fire background is a little better. And from that perspective, I would just advise anybody here, if you know better, do it. But if you don't play around with lithium ion batteries as part of a tinkering project. Lithium ion phosphate, LiFePO4, is far, far safer and far, far less likely to kill you. I'm not saying it can't kill you, but the lithium ion batteries, when we play with them with tinkering projects, have proven to be a problem. Let's just leave it at that. So if you're going to play with batteries, I highly suggest the lithium iron phosphate. That is all. Over to Roy.
Comment, too.
Sure, Brian.
And if you're using lithium-ion batteries and you should drop it or jar it or hit it, consider not using it because they could get unstable and they could go get heat up really quick and turn into a fire.
Okay. Well, you know, I don't know exactly how, what kind of Newton forces kind of reflect that situation, because I'm sure people drop things with lithium iron batteries all the time, and doesn't really set up too much of a risk. But when in doubt, throw it out. You know, and certainly if you're the type of person like me who likes to take things apart, try not to take apart a lithium-ion battery. You know, especially, God forbid, a charged one. You know, if you're going to, you know, make sure it's completely discharged. Even then, I would suggest not to do that. Just watch a YouTube on someone else who did it. You know, those are very, very energetic chemistries that make up this technology. And it can go bad very, very fast. So take care of yourself.
Oh, by the way, I don't know if I mentioned this before, but we're talking about NiCad batteries. Isn't cadmium very toxic? And they took it off the market, or no?
Yeah, yeah. There's a lot of metals that are toxic that were in consumer items for many, many years. You know, I mean, in the old days, it was very easy to get your hands on mercury. Thermometers had mercury. Thermostats had mercury. Nowadays, it's much more difficult. So cadmium also. There's loads of metals that are significantly toxic for human beings.
Our teeth.
Say again?
Our teeth.
Well, yeah, the mercury amalgams are relatively benign. When it's in the amalgamated condition, it's really not that dangerous, although there are people out there that are concerned, that have all kinds of chemical reaction problems and have had their amalgams removed and replaced.
Do they have a substitute for it now?
Yeah, they don't use amalgams anymore. They don't replace the old ones, but just to be on the safe side, they have other substitutes.
Another interesting topic for another day, the way they take these interesting plastics, I guess, in your mouth and cure them with a UV lamp in minutes. Very interesting. For another night.
Thanks, Roy. KD2FYU clear.
Yes, indeed. You're welcome, George. Anytime. I mean, like I always say, if you go kind of just one layer deeper into any subject, you have hours and hours of conversation and stuff to learn. There's a lot of things that all of us take for granted. You know. We the last time we had a filling might have been many, many years ago, and we just don't know what the state of the art is, you know, including things like silver amalgam these days. And also tooth-colored composites. It's another topic, and maybe one of these Sunday nights we'll go down that rabbit hole.
I'm in.
Okie dokes. Yes, indeed. Let me try once more with good old Dave, W2DAV. Are you out there, or did you go away for the rest of the night? Okay, I guess Dave left us for tonight. Maybe he'll come back next Sunday. Brian, you're the last person on our little list for tonight. Do you have any questions, comments, or topics to bring up? I don't realize you've already brought up a bunch, but I was just wondering.
No, I think I'm good. I think I've addressed the whole bunch of little things that I wanted to, so, I'm pretty much on the side for right now.
Okie doke, this is AC2GS, and it's the Limar Technical Net, and, anyone with a question, comment, or topic for tonight, we still have a good half hour to play around with if you're so inclined. So if you have a question or a comment or a topic, hit that push to talk.
KD2BHD.
Yeah, Jim?
I want to say that I really enjoy the way you run the net. And there's a lot to be learned every time I listen. But I think maybe you should share with some of the folks that haven't been here a long time your format. Yeah, I get it. Most do. Not everybody does. Since we seem we have a quiet moment, perhaps you could give us a little instruction on how best to utilize what you do here. I'm trying to come up with the politest way to say it. Over to you.
Okay. I kind of assume it's kind of obvious. So we have a very informal net, much like Dick, K2RIW. He would come on and he would say, you don't have to really check in if you have a question. Give us your name, and we'll get to you, and we'll talk about it. We don't have a topic. I never do, because I tend to think that it kind of limits. It doesn't really expand the range. I'm open to talking about any aspect of science and technology, and amateur radio technology especially, and take it as far as people are interested with. The only way I'm able to judge when people are kind of satiated or bored is when the responses fall down to nothing. So, you know, if you give me static and chirping crickets, I'll move on to something else if I have it. But that's kind of the simple nature. It's very informal. We're all friends here, I hope. People who want to have an argument are best to find other places to argue at. I don't really want to argue with people. I'll give you my opinion about things. I'll accept your opinions, but I'm not necessarily going to agree with your opinions. And if I do, great. If I don't, we'll all have to live with it. But, I mean, it's a very, I think, it's an enjoyable experience. I think we all step away with learning something. About something each Sunday night, and if that's the case, then I've succeeded in my mission. Is there something I left out, Jim?
Thank you.
Okie doke, very good. Once again, if anyone has any questions or topics or comments to make out there, please feel free, hit that push to talk and ID yourself.
WB2BXO.
Yes, Frank. What do you got for us tonight?
Yeah, I just came across something kind of intriguing. I know you don't necessarily think very much of some of the YouTubers, even those with doctorates, and I understand that because anybody can put anything on there. William Spaniel, who's a political science professor at Pitt, game theorist, talks a lot about the Ukraine war and international affairs and stuff. He posted something recently about how a ship carrying nuclear reactor parts to North Korea from Russia was blown up, leaving in the waters between Algeria and Spain, I guess near the Straits of Gibraltar, last back in 2024, and he thinks it was destroyed by something called a supercavitating, he said supercaptivating, but I'm pretty sure he meant, and I just commented on his channel to see if I'm right, though I don't, I didn't, these people get so many comments, I doubt I'll ever see it. I think what he meant was supercavitating torpedo. I mean, the idea sort of makes sense, you know, seems plausible. Sounds a little like something out of The Hunt for Red October. But anyway, I was wondering if you had any thoughts on that technology, whether it's real or not. Go ahead, just curious.
I'm not aware if they're functionally in manufacture in use, but there is such a thing as supercavitating. The only the Hunt for Red October had a little plot device where they screwed up the propellers and made them cavitate, and so the sonar was able to detect them. So before that, they were silent in the water. So they used the term cavitation as a means to explain why they were detected, despite the fact that they were a stealth submarine. But yeah, cavitation is a thing. There are aquatic animals that are able to create bursts of light just by the force of supercavitation. So I wouldn't be at all surprised that they've harnessed something like that for missile weaponry.
Isn't supercavitation when you eat a lot of candy?
No, well, that goes back to the filling conversation.
Yeah, I think if I remember correctly, I don't know, the Hunt for Red October, I think Clancy was criticized for disclosing some information that was presumably secret at the time, which is kind of strange considering that the guy actually had no connection whatsoever with the military. He was a war gamer, apparently. Anyway, if you get a chance, look up William Spaniel's video. It's kind of interesting. He says he actually has no idea who would both have the technology and who would think would dare sink a Russian ship. Pronounce that very carefully. You know, it kind of rules out the possibility that the United States would do it, even though the United States is one of the few that might have that technology. Anyway, very interesting video if you get a chance. WB2BXO, back to Ned.
Okay, very good. I'll take a look at it. You know that the Ukrainians somehow, who barely have a navy, I think they pretty much screwed up two Russian subs.
Yeah, I saw that. They're also thought to have sank, or at least damaged, an oil tanker off the coast of Senegal. Apparently the tankers they've been targeting have intentionally been tankers that are empty, since they don't want to be accused of causing environmental disasters. And who is it? Yeah, I think it's William Spaniel who's essentially calling this a world oil tanker war, since the U.S. has obviously been going after oil tankers going to and from Venezuela. I doubt very much you want to go down that rabbit hole. But anyway, yeah, they seems to be doing some pretty incredible things without a Navy. Okay.
Yes, indeed. I mean, they're very clever people. I mean, a lot of Ukrainians were the engineers and designers of a lot of warcraft before the Soviet Union dissolved. So, I mean, at the beginning of their troubles with each other, it was kind of weirdly amusing that they would hack into Russian systems because they had been the people who designed and built them. And, you know, there were gas stations that had anti-Russian slogans all over them at the beginning of their war. So, you know, they're very clever and ingenious people, and stubborn as hell, which is a pleasure to see. You know, a lot of people just kind of sit back and take stuff, but that'll be the beginning and the end of my political discourse. I like people who are stubborn.
Yeah, I think we need more of them here. Like you said, let's leave that as the beginning and the end of the political discourse. We'll have that next after midnight when we're when the repeater is turned off. Anyway, very interesting situation. Make a long story short, I think you'll agree that while the world seems to think Ukraine is losing, I'm not sure I agree with that. Go ahead and see who's next. I'm going to do some other things, and I'll hopefully be back in time for the space report. BB2BX.
Okay, very good. I really like The Hunt for Red October. Well, I would watch anything with Sean Connery. But, yeah, I mean, that's how the book I learned about magnetohydrodynamics, which was the underlying stealth engine technology for the submarine.
Did you ever know why Russians tend to write only in small letters?
No, why?
Because they don't believe in capitalism.
Okay. Well, now they do. They've got a lot of money. Big business. All the damn oligarchs. So that's the Soviet Union again. That's not Russia. Russia's a slightly different creature. Just as non-democratic, but with a lot of other little adjustments made.
It's a joke. You're overthinking it.
Yeah, I know it's a joke. I'm just overthinking it just for the sake of overthinking it. Anyway, once again, we do have a little bit over 15 minutes if anyone wants to take advantage of it. If you have any questions or comments or topics for discussion that are science and technology-based and certainly not economics or politics or religion, feel free, hit that push to talk and put forth your comment.
KB2MAR.
Yep.
A question regarding lithium iron phosphate deep cycle batteries. The ones that you use in those portable power stations and all that stuff, even the ones that are not in the power stations. A lot of the BMS boards make a lot of noise. I don't know if you guys know a brand of battery or portable power station that doesn't have that noise in it. And, of course, you can probably use ferrites and whatever to try to diminish it over to the way.
Okay, that's a good question. I have no experience whatsoever. All my lithium iron phosphates charge nice and quietly, but I don't have these massive power charging units. If anyone has any expertise and or experience in this particular subject, feel free, hit that push to talk and educate us all. Nothing. Jim, you got anything on these power stations and the noises they produce? I guess not. Well, I'm sorry. no one apparently listening or in the mood to talk has any significant experience in that. I have to kind of do my own little research. Again, I don't have those massive power station things. You know, I might have a little brick that I could use to charge my my cell phone on the run, but, you know, nothing that, you know, is kind of designed to keep your refrigerator running.
When you say power station, do you mean like a power supply, an uninterruptible power supply?
But, you know, using like a vacuum cleaner or whatever, even an air conditioner too, it works for AM radios, reception, and some HF, you hear like that buzzing sound in the background. I tried getting like the best AC output outlet filters for it, and it didn't suppress it at all. So,
a comment.
Steph is probably going to use like, I don't think it's a, it might be a ferrite bead solvable problem. Maybe it can snap it around the AC input of the equipment, and that might help suppress it. I have to do more experimentation.
Yeah, I think you might need something more severe, you know, a power conditioner, if you will. In the case of UPSs, there are two significantly different types of UPSs out there, because what it amounts to is it's a charger for a rechargeable battery that then feeds into an inverter that changes the direct current into 60-cycle AC. Now, if you have a cheap UPS or a cheap energy storage device, it uses a very cheap inverter that gives you a very sloppy, noisy, non-sine wave current. And that's probably what's going on. You're trying to feed your power supply with a decidedly less sine wave power source. More expensive units have much more sophisticated inverter circuits that output relatively pure sine waves. So I don't know if just putting a choke is going to significantly improve upon that. You really have to condition the output signal using some sophisticated electronics. The best way is to, you know, is to simply pay more for a better quality inverter that's part of that power unit. Otherwise, you know, you might be able to stick a Band-Aid on it, but I don't think you'll be able to rid yourself entirely of the background noises. If you have a friend who has an oscilloscope or you have an oscilloscope, you know, just kind of take a look what the output voltage signal looks like. It most likely is going to look real messy.
I'll bet it will. But, I've seen brute force filters in the ARRL handbook, and they recommend using AC capacitors and inline chokes going in. Not necessarily a choke that snaps around the wire. Have everything hooked up in line with the AC output of the unit there. And you would hook up an AC capacitor, 250-volt AC capacitor in parallel over each part of the three-prong part, if you know what I mean. And there's also a choke in series with that also. It's going to be a series parallel hookup. But the ARRL has, it's called a brute force AC filter.
Okay. You know, again, none of these things are binaries. It's probably never going to be an absolutely beautiful sine wave output, but it may bring it closer to what your power, the power supply of your radio and such will tolerate.
Comment.
Yes, Brian?
Okay, I'm sorry, I had my ear away and I heard something about line power conditioner or something like that. What was the question?
He's talking about these power storage devices. They store power as DC batteries, and then they have a inverter that turns it back into AC. And there are expensive inverters that produce beautiful sine waves, and there are crappy, cheap inverters that just sort of give you an AC signal, but not really. If you put it up to an oscilloscope, it looks nothing like an actual sine wave. So we were talking about ways of dealing with situations. Some loads don't really give a damn. You can plug any crappy non-sine wave AC and what, you know, especially things like incandescent light bulbs don't really give a damn.